ओम अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. मुखं करोति वचलं पङ्गुं लङ्गायते गिरं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुं दीनतारिणं. नमामों विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नाम्ने. नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे. जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्री वसादि गौर भक्तवृंद. हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे. सो टुडे इज क्लास नंबर 18 एंड वी विल बी कवरिंग वर्सेस 51-55. एंड इफ यू सी द एंटायर ब्रह्म संहिता इज ओनली 62 वर्सेस. So today, if we cover till 55, maybe we'll just have about 2 or 3 classes left to cover the rest of the verses. So at this point, we are almost coming to the end of Brahma's prayers. In the previous classes, two or three classes, we have been seeing how Krishna is the source of everything. He's the source of all incarnations. He's the source of Brahman. He's the source of all material creations. And he is the source of all rasas that is there in this world, in the spiritual world also. And then how Krishna is the source and the basis of everything, how he is the Lord of all lords, how he lives in Goloka, and Goloka in fact is the topmost planet, how Krishna is the origin of Durga, Lord Shiva. And then we went through this verse where it tells about how Krishna is actually like the original candle, and the other expansions of Krishna are like the candles that are lit by this original candle. Then we also heard in the previous class about great personalities like Seshanag, Mahavishnu, Brahma, Ganesh and others. So we saw how Krishna is the origin of everything that exists, of everyone, any great personality you can think of, how Krishna is the source of all of them. Now, we'll be continuing in a similar fashion. It will continue to the rest of the verses, at least 51 to 54 at least. We'll be talking about how Krishna actually is the source of everything. It will continue in the same pattern. We'll be seeing one by one what is being discussed from verse 51 onwards. So I'll read verse number 51 with a translation, and then we can see the discussion.
Agnirmahi gaganamambu marutishascha kalastatatma manasiti jagatrayani yasmat bhavanti vibhavanti vishanti yamcha govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. Agnihi, fire, mahi, earth, gaganam, either, Ambu, water, marut, air, dishaha, directions, cha also, kalaha, time, tata, as well as atma, soul, manasi, the mind, iti, tas, jagatrayani, the three worlds, yasmat, from whom, bhavanti, they originate, vibhavanti, they exist, vishanti, they enter, yam, whom, cha also, govindam, govinda, adipurusham, the original person, tam, him, aham, I, bhajami, worship. Translation: the three worlds are composed of 9 elements, which are fire, earth, ether, water, air, direction, time, soul and mind. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, from whom they originate, in whom they exist and into whom they enter at the time of universal cataclysm. So, 9 features of this material world are discussed in this verse. Usually we say, like from the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, we know that this world has 24 ingredients, which includes the senses, etc. So, in the Bhagavad Gita 13.6 and 7, it is stated, the 5 great elements, false ego, intelligence, the unmanifested, the 10 senses and the mind, the 5 sense objects, desire, hatred, happiness, distress, and the aggregate, the life symptoms and convictions, all these are considered in summary to be the field of activities and its interactions. So
Basically, we know of 24 ingredients. In fact, in the purport of this Bhagavad Gita verse, Prabhupada writes that from authoritative statements of great sages in the Vedanta Sutra, the components of this world can be understood as follows. First, there is earth, water, fire, air, and ether. These are five great elements and they are called as Mahabhuta. Then there is false ego, intelligence, and the unmanifested state of the three modes of material nature. Then there are five senses for acquiring knowledge, which is the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, skin. Then we have the five working senses, which is the voice that is coming out from the throat, the legs, hands, anus, and genitals. Then above the senses, there is the mind, which is within, it is like a sense. It can be called as a sense that is within. So including the mind, there are 11 senses altogether. And there are five objects of the senses, which is smell, taste, form, touch, and sound. So the aggregate of these 24 elements is called as the field of activity. And if one makes an analytical study of these 24 subjects, then he can very well understand field of activity. And then there are desire, hatred, happiness, distress, which are the interactions and representatives of these five great elements of in the gross body. So the living symptoms represented by consciousness and, they're just a manifestation of the subtle body like mind, ego, and intelligence. And these subtle elements are included within the field of activities. So this is what Prabhupada is writing the purport. So the bottom line that we are trying to say is that we have heard of these 24 elements, about how these 24 elements exist in the material world, and we have learned about the different interactions and from their interactions what all is produced. We have heard of all this material elements that is there in this material world. So this verse, Brahma Samhita verse, is not actually elaborating on these 24 elements. Rather, it is trying to tell us that all these 24 elements is coming from Govinda. And Govinda actually, he is the origin and he sustains and he withdraws everything and he is the ultimate controller of everything that is present inside this material world. But the interesting part here is that usually when we talk about 24 elements, we talk about mind, intelligence and all that. But interestingly here, the soul is included in the list. So there are different lists given by different scriptures, like sometimes one set of elements are included and sometimes different set is presented. So it depends. Here we see about nine features that is presented, and of which soul is also put together among these different elements. Of course, the soul is not material and it cannot be analyzed the way the material elements can be analyzed by a scientist. It is completely spiritual. But still, this verse says that Govinda, who is the origin of all these material elements, is also the origin of the soul. So he is the origin, he is the middle, and he is the end of all of this. So that's all this verse talks about, like how Govinda is a source of everything we have been seeing in the previous verses. Similarly here, even things like direction, time, soul, mind, all of this is included. Govinda is the beginning, end, and he's the middle of everything. So this is the verse. We have actually gone through these elements in other scriptures also, so I think there's nothing much to elaborate on that. We'll go to the next verse.
Yachakshuresha savita sakala grahanam raja samasta suramurti rasesha teja yasyagnya brahmati sambhrata kala chakro govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. The sun, who is the king of all the planets, full of infinite effulgence, the image of the good soul, is as the eye of the of this world. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, in pursuance of whose order the sun performs his journey, mounting on the wheel of time. So we see that in this verse talks about the sun also having its origin, and the Supreme Lord Krishna is the origin of the sun also.
Now, actually, in our previous class, we were talking about Panchadeva Upasana. When we were talking about Ganesh and Shiva and Durga and all of them, we were talking about Panchadeva Upasana. So, among the Panchadevas, the sun is also considered as one of the primary deities. And the sun is worshipped by the impersonalists. And the sun god is often known as Surya Narayana because he is an expansion of the Supreme Lord. In some places, the sun is referred as a direct expansion of the Supreme Lord. In some places, he is referred as a jiva. But however, whether he is a jiva or he is an expansion, we can understand that he is specially empowered by the Supreme Lord. So this sun is actually very important. Sun is the source of all heat that is there in existence. So the so because he is the source of all heat, he is considered important, and in fact he is considered as the source of life in this material world. And because he is the source of all life in the material world, he is worshipped as the supreme. We see even in our Vedic tradition, sometimes the sun is considered as the supreme because he sustains life in this material world. See, we understand that plants, they survive only because of the sun, and because the plants survive, animals survive. So everything actually, everybody is surviving only because of the sun. However, this sun, which can easily be considered as a source of everything or as the source of this material world, however, this sun, he gets the potency from Narayana or Govinda. And in fact, the Upanishads, they say that because of the fear of the Lord, the sun actually rises. So the sun, he is empowered by the Supreme Lord. Sometimes he is glorified as the eye of the Lord. And because the sun is the eye of the Lord, actually, all living entities get the power to see in the presence of the sun. The power to see that we are having, all of us are able to see with our eyes. The power that we get to see is because this sun is actually the eye of the Lord. So indirectly, it is actually the Supreme Lord, through the medium of the sun, who is enabling us to get the power to even have vision. So that's how powerful the Supreme Lord is. So unless Krishna sees, no one sees. Unless he sees through his eyes of the sun, actually no one is able to see. And in fact, you know, it is said that among all the demigods, when we talk about demigod worship, generally sun is worshipped for good health. And that is very true because, you know, if one is put under the sun, he gets all the nutrition. Like, for example, nowadays, this vitamin D is becoming a big issue. Vitamin D, without vitamin D, I'm not able to absorb this nutrition, that nutrition. So sun is considered as an all-in-all solution to all diseases or problems. And even in Ayurveda, it is said that, you know, you try all kinds of healing processes, but if nothing works, put that person under the sun and eventually he will get healed. So that is the power of the sun. And also according to the Vedic system, there is only one sun in this entire Brahmanda or this material universe. The 14 planetary systems, there is actually only one sun. This concept that every star is a sun, according to modern science, is not supported by the Vedic system. There is only sun, one sun for each universe. So that is the point that the Vedic scriptures make. He's the one all-in-all sun for everybody. So he's not just the sun for the nine planets that we talk about in modern science. So some of the duties of the sun are he provides heat and light. So this is the primary duty of sun. And besides that, if we look at scriptures, the sun god has had other duties too. Like for example, Krishna first spoke Bhagavad Gita to the sun god. There's this famous verse that says, Sri Bhagavanu Vacha, Imam Vivasvate Yogam, Proktvan Aham Avyayam, Vivasvan Manave Praha, Manur Ikshvakave Bravit. So the Supreme Lord said, I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god Vivasvan, and Vivasvan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu in turn instructed it to Ikshvaku. So we see that other than providing heat and light, the sun god, Vivasvan, he received the Bhagavad Gita from Lord Krishna. And he regulates rainfall by evaporating heat, besides giving light and heat. He actually evaporates water and he gives rainfall. He helps the jiva's mind to be fixed in Krishna consciousness. So it is said that the sun sterilizes everything, and what he does is not only does he sterilize the things in the environment, like for example, Prabhupada often, one of the quotes that he has given many times is that, you know, if there is a urinal, if it is put in under the sun, it automatically gets sterilized. That is the power of the sun. So like that, somehow or the other, however contaminated we should take to Krishna consciousness, because Krishna is like the sun. He will easily purify us and he will sterilize us. So that's one thing that comes to my mind when you talk about the sterilizing capacity of the sun. So similarly in scriptures, it is said that the sun sterilizes everything, including the mind. So only with a clear mind we can actually perform Krishna consciousness, and for that we actually require the mercy of the sun. And the sun, he does this thing of purifying the mind because he is an expansion of Lord Aniruddha. Like we have this Chaturvyuha forms, right? Like you have Pradyumna, Aniruddha, Shankarsana and Vasudeva. So this Aniruddha form of the Lord is actually the Lord of the mind. And he sterilizes, he keeps us fixed in Krishna consciousness through the medium of the sun, who helps us, keep our mind fixed on Krishna. So like this, that is one of the duties of the sun actually. Then another duty of the sun is that he's also a witness to the man's activities. Like in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when we read this, in the sixth canto, there is the story of Ajamila. So in that story, when the Vishnu Dutas and the Yamadutas are talking, when the Yamadutas come to claim the soul of Ajamila, that time there's a conversation. So at that time, there is this famous statement. It is 6th canto, chapter 1, verse number 42. It says, "The sun, fire, sky, air, demigods, moon, evening, day, night, directions, water, land, and super soul himself all witness the activities of the living entity." So generally, super soul, I mean, he's often celebrated as the witness to all our activities. Whatever we do, we cannot hide it from the super soul. So similarly, there are other personalities also witnessing every action of ours, and of which the sun is listed as the first person. You see, the sun, fire, sky, air, demigods, moon, evening, day, night, directions, water, land, and super soul himself all witness the activities of the living entities. So this is another function of the sun. And the Taittiriya Upanishad, actually, it is stated in the Taittiriya Upanishad that the sun rises and sets in the fear of the Lord. So it's only because of Krishna's mercy that the sun rises or it sets, or whatever benefits we are getting from the sun is only by the mercy of Krishna. And then, where else do we see the sun? We see the sun when we chant the Gayatri Mantra. We chant the Gayatri Mantra to gain spiritual strength. And within the sun, Lord Narayana is situated and he has a golden hue. There is a statement in scripture. And there, Prabhupada writes in one of the next verses, Prabhupada writes, "Actually, Narayana within the sun is maintaining the entire universe. Therefore, Narayana should be worshipped in the Gayatri Mantra or the Rig Mantra." So when we do the Gayatri, actually it's a glorification to Narayana. And when we chant the Gayatri, generally it is like directly, addressing the sun, right? Because when we chant Burbu Vaswa and all that, it is directly addressing the sun. But actually, through the sun, we are actually worshipping Lord Narayana. So that is another place where we see the sun god taking prominence. And then the sunlight itself actually comes from Govinda, in the sense that the effulgence of, we all know, the effulgence of Brahman, Brahman itself is the effulgence of the body of Govinda, and a spark of that Brahman is actually seen as sunlight. So basically, the sun's energy or whatever the sun is giving, the sunlight itself is a spark of energy that is coming from the Brahma Jyoti, which is the effulgence of the Lord. So this way also we understand that Govinda is actually the source of all sunlight. So, so like this, we see in this verse, there are so many functions for the sun. like I was mentioning, right from, you know, he providing heat and light, regulating rainfall by evaporating all the water vapor. Then he keeps the jiva's mind fixed on Krishna consciousness through because he functions because of the mercy of Aniruddha, and then he's one of the chief witnesses to the man's activity. He was the first one to receive the Bhagavad Gita quite recently, as Krishna mentions it in the Bhagavad Gita. And then through the Gayatri Mantra, he's present in the Gayatri Mantra and we worship him, though we are actually worshipping the Supreme Lord Narayana. And whatever sunlight is coming is just a spark of the Brahman effulgence. And like this, the Supreme Lord is the source of the sun that we see in this universe. So this verse ends like this, saying that how Krishna is the source of everything. And with this, actually, we are finishing to see how Krishna is the source of all that exists, all the demigods and all of that that we have been listening in the past one or two classes. So with this, this part ends, where Krishna is the source of all demigods. Now, if you see the next few verses, which is 53, 54, 55, you will see that these verses are actually in progression. They are talking about how the potency of all the living entities or the fruitive activities or whatever good or bad we are doing, all the strength that we have, everything is coming from the Supreme Lord. So that is what we will be seeing from verses 53 to 55, and these verses actually flow in progression. Like you will see one verse continues into the other. So we will do these verses, 53.
Dharmo ata papa nishchaya shrutayas tapasmi brahmandikita patagavadhyas cha jiva yadatta matra vibhava prakata prabhava govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. Dharma, virtue, ata also papa nishchaya, all vices, shrutayaha, the Vedas, tapasmi, penances, Brahma, Adi, beginning from Lord Brahma, Kita Patanga, insects, Avadhayaha, down to Cha, and Jivaha, Jiva, yet by whom, Datta, conferred, Matra, exclusively, Vibhava, by the power, Prakata, manifested, Prabhavaha, potence is Govindam, Govinda, Adi Purusham, the original person, Tam, him, Aham, I, Bhajami, worship. Translation: I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, by whose conferred power are maintained the manifested potencies that are found to exist of all virtues, all vices, the Vedas, the penances of, and all the jivas from Brahma to the meanest insect. So this verse talks about how whatever is maintaining anything, that is whatever, you can say, whatever living entity or anything in this material world that is maintaining something else, that means that living entity has some power, right? If someone is able to maintain someone else, that means that person has some power. So this power of maintaining anything comes from Govinda. That is what this verse is trying to say. So he's giving the potency for all virtues, all valuable results that can be achieved through dharma. Everything is coming from the Lord. Even the potency in sin is also coming from the Lord. So everything, the potency in the Vedas, potency in the penances, like how people take vows to achieve certain goals, even that strength actually comes from the Supreme Lord. So he's the power in everything. He's the power and he's the ability in knowledge. So like this, he's everything. All the potency also comes from him. So this is what this verse is actually indicating. Actually, all these three verses are quite similar. Power of everything, potency of everything. Whatever we do in this world, everything is only by the mercy of the Lord. So this applies to all the living entities, right from Brahma to the meanest insect. And that's how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati translates it. So we have 8,400,000 species, of which 400,000 are only humans. And among these 400,000, very few are considered to be civilized. And very few of these civilized people actually follow Vedic culture properly.
And even the ones who follow Vedic culture, most people who are following Vedic culture, they just follow fruitive activities. They are just interested in fruitive activities. They are not really interested in self-realization. And among these, very few have Brahminical qualities, okay, who have Brahminical qualities and who are interested in knowing the Supreme. And among them, very few are Vaishnavas. So it's a very, very rare thing. To be a devotee is a very rare thing. The commentary actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he says, how by the mercy of Vaishnavas one can be purified. So the best of, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in the purport he's writing, the best of people who know the real goal of life are called as Aryans. To get free from the cycle of birth and death, they follow religious principles. Primary principles is devotion to God. Secondary is to regulate material desire to avoid sinful activities. But best is the pure devotee because he is absorbed in Krishna. So basically, if we follow this Devi Varnashram and continue to follow this ninefold devotional service, you know, starting with Shravanam, Kirtanam and all that, we can become perfect. If our Varnashram is perfect and we are not satisfying Krishna through devotion, then it is all a waste. No use following Varnashram Dharma. So therefore, we have to follow Daivi Varnashram. That means doing devotional service and continuing to be in the Varnashram. Then it is perfect. But if we are just following Varnashram and not having any devotion or not doing activities like the ninefold devotional activities that are satisfying Krishna, then just following Varnashram Dharma is meaningless. Just like the Brahmins who refuse to give food to Krishna. In the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, we read the story of how the Yajnik Brahmins, they refused to give food to Krishna. So they were actually very qualified. They were following very good Varnashram. But still, they had very good Brahminical qualities, but still they were not Vaishnavas because they had one quality, which is pride. So unless there is devotion, saintly qualities will not manifest. So one has to be Krishna conscious for actual true saintly qualities to be manifest. So actually I'm just elaborating on the purport that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati has spoken about. Basically, this verse just says, you know, we get all our strength of to do whatever we are able to do only by the mercy of Krishna. But the highest thing to do is actually devotional service. So though we are getting our strength, potency, everything for so many activities in this world, but the best thing to do with all this is actually to be Krishna conscious and following the regulative principles and following our Varnashram, we must be Krishna conscious and we should work towards bhakti. That's the only way. And unless this is manifest, all other qualities are useless. So we'll continue to verse number 54.
Yastva Indra Gopam Atavendra Mahosva Karma Bandhanurupa Palabhajanam An Atanoti Karmani Nirdahati Kintu Chabakti Bajam Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bajami. Yahi Hu Govinda Tu But Indra Gopam, to the small red insect called Indragopa, Atha, Va, or even Indram, to King Indra, King of Heaven, Aho, O, Swakarma, of one's own fruitive activities, Bandha, bondage, Anurupa, according to Phala, of reactions, Bhajanam, enjoying or suffering, Atanoti, bestows, Karmani, all fruitive activities and their reactions, Nirdhahati destroys kintu but cha also bhakti bhajam of persons engaged in devotional service govindam govinda adi purusham the original person tam him aham I bhajami worship. So
I adore the primeval Lord Govinda who burns up to their roots all fruitive activities of those who are imbued with devotion and partially ordains for each the due enjoyment of the fruits of one's activities of all those who walk in the path of work in accordance with the chain of their previously performed works, no less in the case of the tiny insect that bears the name of Indragopa than in that of Indra, king of the Devas. So, this verse continues to say in similar lines that everyone's existence is controlled by the Lord by the medium of karma. So all the potencies given by Krishna, the roots of fruitive activities are controlled by him. So this verse also details about how the Lord deals with the devotees and karmis and controls the results of various sins. So there are two aspects that is said in this verse. One aspect is that everyone's existence is controlled by the Lord through the medium of karma. However, the way Krishna deals with a devotee is slightly different from the way Krishna deals with a karmi. So these are the two things that are being told. One thing is about fruitive activities, about how everyone is controlled by karma, and the second thing is about how he has some kind of a partiality towards devotees. So that is what this verse talks about. So when we talk about Krishna being, Krishna actually controlling the results of various sins, or about how the Lord deals with the devotees and the karmis. If you take, for example, a karmi, if a karmi is worshipping the Lord, asking for money, if it is not his karma, that is, whatever birth we have taken is based on our past karma. So if we have the karma to attain certain things in this birth, it will happen. Okay, that is the law of karma. So that is for a normal person who's not really into bhakti or who's not a devotee of the Lord. He's just a person who's not so much into devotional service or not surrendered to the Lord. So for such a person, if he's asking for money, for example, if he's worshipping demigods or even if he's worshipping, for some material profit, if it is not his karma to get it won't come. That is the law of karma. But for devotees, it is slightly different. That is what the verse says. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, in the purport, he is giving some elaboration on that. He says, God impartially induces the fallen souls to act in the way that is consequent on the deeds of their previous births and to enjoy the fruition of their labors. But out of his great mercy to his devotees, he purges out by the fire of ordeal the root of all karma, which is nescience and evil desires. Karma, though without beginning, is still perishable. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is saying everybody's life is going according to the law of karma. But for the devotee, he purges out by the fire of ordeal the root of all karma. So what does this mean? Just like gold is purified by fire. So when a devotee learns to depend on Krishna and he takes shelter of Krishna, then that experience, whatever he is there, for such a devotee, he goes through a lot of experiences and tests. Okay, for a devotee, he goes through this fire of ordeal. That means he goes through a lot of tough situations. But if we take shelter of Krishna, whatever situation, whatever test that Krishna is putting us through, it will not be heavy because we are taking shelter of Krishna and we can get purified by that test. So Krishna, he tests his devotees more. He puts them through the fire of ordeal. Why is he doing that? So that he can take out the root of all the karma. All the karma that is there for a devotee, he is just trying to pull it out by the fire of ordeal that the devotee is going through. So therefore, for a devotee, he goes through more suffering than a normal person. So when Krishna takes charge, when we take shelter of Krishna, according to this verse, Krishna is taking charge of our lives. So at that time, sometimes a devotee seems to be suffering more than anybody else. Why is he suffering more than anyone else? Because Krishna is putting him through this fire of ordeal so that he can burn away the root of the karma. But at this time, it is more important for us to depend more and more on Krishna and take more shelter of Him, so that the experience and the test that we are going through will not get very heavy and we get purified by the test. Krishna basically pushes us so that we can improve and we can take better shelter of Krishna. Actually, after hearing the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where all the hellish planets are described, there's a description of what punishment is given for each sin, right? In the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, there's detailed description about this. At that time, Parikshit Maharaj is silently listening to all these punishments that a person goes through for different sins that he performs. And the beginning of the sixth canto, once the fifth canto is done, in the beginning of the sixth canto, Parikshit Maharaj asks a very good question, very valid question. He says, what is the use of all this atonement? For this sin, I have to go through this punishment and you get atoned. All the atonement is happening in hell. I go to hell and I've been beaten up and then I atone for my sin. So this is the process that is described in the fifth canto. So at that time, Parikshit Maharaj is asking, what is the use of all this atonement? Because the root of the sin is still in the heart of that person. These impressions are going to be carried again. So just because he's going to hell, of course there'll be some improvement. He will probably change a bit, but still the root of the sin is there in the heart. So at that time, actually, Sukadeva Goswami appreciates that question that Parikshit Maharaj asks, and he narrates the story of Ajamil. That's where the story of Ajamil comes into picture. By pure devotion, chanting the holy names of the Lord, it is so powerful that it can destroy many sins from many lifetimes. That is the power of devotional service. That's when the story of Ajamil is spoken and the devotional service is actually glorified at that point. So it is only by Krishna's mercy that the root of the sins can be burnt. But still, though the person goes through this fire of ordeal, is being tested so much, but still, Krishna is favoring him by burning out all the sin. So just like this devotional service is very potent, just like the sun, you know, even when it is in the horizon, when it has just started to dawn, even at that time, even before it fully rises, even a glimpse of the sun is able to dissipate darkness, right? During dawn, just the sun is just rising. It's not even fully risen. It's just about to rise the horizon. But still, in its presence, so much darkness is dissipated. Just like that, a glimpse of devotional is very, very powerful. So this is the potency of devotional service. And in fact, the mood of a devotee when he or she goes through such trials and tests, when Krishna is testing them and burning this root of karma, the mood of a devotee is to take shelter more and more of Krishna. And this mood is very beautifully reflected by the verses of Queen Kunti. This is a very famous verse. Everyone quotes this verse. 1825, Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 825. Kunti says, I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again, so that we could see you again and again. For seeing you means that we will no longer see repeated births and deaths. So in this verse, Kunti prays that she wants more and more suffering, so that she can depend more and more on Krishna, and she can see more and more Krishna. She can see Krishna all the time. So this is a very beautiful verse that inspires everybody to take shelter of Krishna in that mood. We should be more concerned about taking shelter of him so that we can get his association all the time, rather than thinking, oh, let this this situation simply vanish. It's very difficult, but still, Queen Kunti is a big inspiration for all devotees. So Kunti, she displays these symptoms on the level of raga. She's got intense attachment to Krishna. She says, whatever will please you, Krishna, I will do, even if it is a displeasure to us. And I look forward to these sufferings if it is going to be pleasing to Krishna. So whatever calamity was there, she knew that Krishna would come. And because Krishna was there, she would be very happy seeing him. So the calamity that stimulated Krishna's coming in front of her, she would forget that. So she would say, let it come again and again so that we can all see you. Because seeing you gives me so much happiness. And I forget the stimulation, which is the problem that I called you for. So this is not some form of, you know, torture upon oneself to think, oh, let calamities come again and again. But still, it is the pleasure of actually seeing Krishna. That is what they are feeling. They are feeling, let the calamity come. It's okay. Let the stimulation come. But still, at the end of it, Krishna is coming in front of me. That is more important. And I get more and more happy seeing Krishna. So this is how a devotee actually feels. As and when, as the more and more we take shelter of Krishna, the more we feel that Krishna is present in our life. And that actually gives us happiness. So even if we have calamities, actually Krishna is favoring us. He's burning the root of all the karma and he's ready to be with us. So this is a very beautiful experience. So this is actually the fire of ordeal that a devotee is going through. And we can see from the example of Queen Kunti how to react when we are in this fire of ordeal. So everyone has different levels of making sins. Nobody is like at the same level. Even among devotees, we all have different backgrounds. None of us know what our previous births were. And in fact, we'll be very surprised and shocked to know some of our previous births, the kind of sins that we have performed. We are all at different levels of making sins. And even in this birth, we continue to do a lot. But still, surrender to the Supreme Lord can burn all these sins. In fact, many. That's why you see. I mean, you see a lot of devotees. They suffer more than even very sinful people. Like for example, Bali Maharaj is actually described in the Bhagavatam. The Pandavas, they went through so much suffering. Bali Maharaj, he had everything taken away from him. He was going through this fire of ordeal. Everything was taken away from him. Dishonor is worse than death, they say. He was stripped of everything, but he surrendered everything. Of course, for him, that is the best thing the Lord can do. So we can take strength from such stories that is told in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, for many devotees, we cannot say it is past sin or something. The Lord is trying to teach us something through their example. That's all. For us, we can say it is past sins, but for exalted devotees, it's generally not past sins. The Lord is just using them as an example. So because only such devotees, surrendered devotees, can handle all this, they never go against the Lord. They teach the entire world by example. Like this, the Lord glorifies his pure devotees. And this is what we read in the Bhagavatam. The whole Bhagavatam is about devotees of Krishna, the life and the glories of the devotees. So Krishna uses especially such devotees who are very surrendered. Actually, whatever they were experiencing was not really because of past sins or something. For us, maybe it is. But they are setting an example to the world, how Krishna protects them. That's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he writes in the purport, it is a great wonder that Krishna, being impartial, is fully partial to his devotees. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu, he says, I am equal to all. Yes, Krishna is perfectly being impartial to everybody, but still he is fully partial to his devotees. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, actually in the end of this commentary for this verse, he writes this sentence, very, very beautiful. He says, it's a great wonder that Krishna, being impartial, is fully partial to his devotees. So a father, he gives a special attention to a child who's fully dependent on him, right? So like that, the Lord, he gives special attention to a devotee who's fully surrendered and fully dependent on him. So, but this special favor that the Lord shows is actually very, very rare. It's not really for, he doesn't show special favor to everybody. And being surrendered, completely surrendered to the Lord is also a very rare phenomenon. And the Lord, why it is very rare is because the Lord agrees to become their servant. He becomes subservient. So the special favor is actually shown to a selected few. It's very, very rare. But so we can take inspiration from such examples like Bali Maharaj and Pandavas and try to take better shelter of the Lord and understand that any suffering that we are going through is actually the mercy of the Lord. Whatever suffering it may be there, let it be there. So this is a very high level understanding. Practically, it's very difficult to implement in our lives. But the more we read, that's why we have the Srimad Bhagavatam. The more we read and hear about these devotees, we just have to imbibe and take inspiration from them. Just imbibe these qualities. Try to take inspiration and understand it was all because of our past sin. And Krishna is there by our side. And at this moment, if I take more shelter of Krishna, I feel more happiness and I feel more protected, and Krishna is personally with me. What other better experience can I have? So this is what we are supposed to teach ourselves from this verse. So we'll go on to verse number 55.
Yam krodha kama sahaja pranayadi bhiti vatsalya moha guru gaurava sevya bhavai sanchitya tasya sadrishim tanum apur ete Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami.
Translation: I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, the meditators of whom, by meditating upon him under the sway of wrath, amorous passion, natural friendly love, fear, parental affection, delusion, reverence, and willing service, attain to body forms befitting the nature of their contemplation. This verse is actually very familiar because we have already covered this about the different rasas of the different devotees. The different devotees are in different rasas. They have different attachments to the Lord and they achieve bodily forms based on the meditation that they are having. Like people, how they attain the spiritual world in a particular relationship with Krishna. So this is actually very similar to verse number 36. Specifically how devotees achieve perfection some very important parts of devotional service is actually explained in this verse. Though it is very similar to verse number 36, there are some differences. In this verse, we see how devotees attain Krishna either through fear, hatred, delusion or love. So you see the highest love is described, conjugal love and parental love, all that is described, friendly love, all that is there. And also hatred is also described through fear, hatred, delusion. So all these, you can say, kind of negative thoughts, negative feelings are also described in this verse. So even if it is by hatred or fear, what happens is these devotees, they become totally absorbed in Krishna, and as a result of thinking of Krishna so intensely, they have achieved the highest perfection. So different people achieve different goals based on the nature of their Krishna consciousness. Now, there are three negative things that are spoken here, right? One is hate. One is fear and the other one is delusion. So I just wanted to, because we have already seen the positive ones, like, you know, having parental affection or conjugal love, friendly love, dasya bhav, all this we have described already in our previous sessions. We have gone through that in detail. So I just wanted to touch upon the negative feelings, that how people have attained perfection. So when you talk about hate, the example that comes to our mind is Shishupal. Shishupala, he actually hated Krishna so much. It is said that even when he was born with a hate to Krishna. When he would hear Krishna's name, even as a baby, he would express so much hatred. That small baby, Shishupala, would express so much hatred. So he would hate Krishna so much, and he hated Krishna till the end, till his head was chopped off by Sudarshan. So that is about Shishupala. Now when we talk about fear, the person who was most scared of Krishna was Kamsa. So he was always meditating on Krishna in fear and he attained perfection. So that is Kamsa. And when we talk about delusion, it is actually the Brahmanas, the Yajnik Brahmanas we were talking about in the previous verse. They are the example of people who eventually attained perfection through delusion. Immediately they didn't attain, because in fact towards the end of that chapter they were glorifying their wives. And still, because of fear of Kamsa, they continued to do their duties and they didn't fully surrender to Krishna. But eventually they are known to have progressed because of delusion. Delusion is also a negative feeling. But the Yajnik Brahmanas who refused food to Krishna, they became Krishna conscious later because of this delusion. That is what the Acharyas explain. So, even a jiva who's not having very favorable qualities, but who has intense thoughts about Krishna, even if he has hate or fear, even such people are given benedictions by the Lord. But however, bhakti should be done favorably. We have heard this many times, Rupa Goswami's favorite verse, Anyabilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmadhyana Anavratam Anukulyena Krishnana Seelam Bhaktir Uttama. Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu 111. So Krishna Anusilanam, Anushilanam, that means favorable devotional service. That is very important. Whatever, we are not recommended to do any cultivate negative feelings, because we cannot do even that perfectly. We are so hopeless that we can't even be a good, we cannot hate Krishna perfectly, or we cannot be have fear towards Krishna perfectly. So we are all recommended. Actually, Krishna Anushilam is very important. What devotional service means, it should be Anushilanam. It should be favorable. That is what devotional service is all about. So that is the best method of that should be adopted. Now, in the commentary, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he talks about Vaidhi Bhakti and Raganuga Bhakti. That is spontaneous devotional service and devotional service with rules and regulation. Now, Vaidhi Bhakti, this is the kind of devotional service that is recommended for us, right? When we talk about favorable devotional service is recommended, that's the first step. We should not be like Kamsa or Sishupal. Second step is, there are two categories of devotional service. One is Vaidhi, the other one is Raganuga. So when we talk about Vaidhi, means we are accepting rules and regulations. Initially, a person, we do not have so much taste for loving devotional service. But we do it because we understand that it is worthwhile. Like for example, just think about what we do at home, chanting the holy names. Or for example, deity worship at home. It's a simple thing, chanting the holy names, doing deity worship. It's not that we are doing it out of so much taste for it. Okay, we are doing it because we have to do it. We understand the benefits of it. We understand it is important for us to chant the holy names, and hence we do it. Okay, or doing this arati, puja, all that. We understand that it is something that we do for the deities, and we do it. We are not doing it spontaneously. That spontaneous loving devotion is not there. Like so many things for that matter, many aspects of devotional service is not that we are enjoying it and we are relishing it and doing it. We are just doing it because it's worthwhile. Even though we are not really wanting to do it, we will do it. And we will accept whatever is favorable for devotional service, and we will reject that which is not favorable for devotional service. So this is called as Vaidhi Bhakti. You follow rules and regulations. You do certain things in a regulated manner as recommended by scripture. What happens when you do this? Over a period of time, you come to a level of having very strong feeling of spontaneous attraction to do it and serve Krishna spontaneously. You'll come to that point. Like for example, we sign up for many services. It's not, mostly we like to do the service we sign up. But even if we are given certain services that we don't like, over a period of time, first you do it as a duty. Over a period of time, you develop that love and spontaneous feeling. Oh, I want to do it. I so badly want to do it. If I don't turn up today, it's not going to be good. You know, that spontaneous feeling was developed over a period of time. So in Vaidhi Sadhana, there is no spontaneous attraction. Adherence to scriptures is there, and it is a beginning stage of devotional life. But even in the Vaidhi Bhakti state, okay, even when we are doing Vaidhi Bhakti, the seed of Raga Bhakti is there. Okay, this is something I thought was very interesting to hear. Even when we are doing Vaidhi Bhakti, we have Raga Bhakti. Raga Bhakti seed, it is not fully sprouted, but there is that seed. Like for example, seeing the deity and hearing like Bhagavatam stories about the Lord and his devotees, it gives you such happiness that you cannot explain. Right? So that means there is the seed of spontaneous love. It is there in our heart. Even if we are doing Vaidhi Bhakti externally, it is there. Just that over a period of time, the seed will sprout. We just have to wait for that time. So when we do Vaidhi Bhakti, there is a certain amount of fear. Like for example, even if you don't want to do a service, you will push yourself. And you will mostly do it because you don't want to make an offense or something like that. But over a period of time, when the seed sprouts and it becomes Raganuga Bhakti, it becomes spontaneous love. This fear goes away. There's only happiness and excitement. So in Raganuga, that mentality of fear or dry duty is not there. Rag means attachment. So the heart is more purified, the soul is more uncovered, then it results in bhava, a feeling of a particular type of attraction. So whichever rasa one is in with Krishna, that particular rasa is awakened, and we begin to serve in a particular specific way, then at that time, the devotee becomes an object of mercy of Krishna, and Krishna pours his mercy upon us, and we drown in that mercy, and we are not interested in anything material anymore. So this is at that stage, very, very high stage of Raganuga Bhakti, at the stage of Bhava and Prema. That's when all this happened. We understand our constitutional position, our rasa with Krishna, everything is completely awakened. So the different rules and regulations to be followed and the different offenses during Vaidhi Bhakti, all that is explained in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. But however, whether it is Vaidhi Bhakti or a person has progressed to Raganuga Bhakti, 9 processes of devotional service is performed throughout. Throughout we perform the 9 processes of devotional service, starting with Shravanam Kirtanam. So, and Raganuga means devotees who are... that is following the footsteps of the eternal associates of Krishna. So the eternal associates of Krishna are called as Ragatmika devotees, and the devotees who follow in their footsteps are called as Raganuga devotees. So we can never become Ragatmika. Ragatmika are the eternal associates. They set the standard and they show the way how to be a perfect devotee. We just follow in their footsteps. So, and these Ragatmika devotees or eternal associates of the Lord, like the cowherd boys who are playing with Krishna or Nanda or Yashoda or the gopis, they don't have to learn anything. They have direct association of Krishna. But whereas Raganuga Bhakti is the one that, it's like following in their footsteps and learning from them. So the devotees who follow in the footsteps of Ragatmika devotees are called as Raganuga devotees. Okay, so that's what the generally people, after Vaidhi Bhakti, we graduate to Raganuga Bhakti, but we never become Ragatmika. That is already taken, those positions are taken. Now, Raganuga has 2 types according to Rupa Goswami. It is Kamanuga and Sambandhanuga. Kamanuga, Raganuga Bhaktas are of 2 types. The 2 types are Kamanuga and Sambandhanuga. So as the word itself says, Kamanuga means the ones who are in conjugal relationship, and Sambandhanuga are the other attractions. All other attractions are under one category. Kamanuga, conjugal love, is a separate category. Okay, they are the topmost. It is a separate category. So Raganuga are of 2 types, Kamanuga and Sambandhanuga. And there is one more also interesting category, which is called as Kama Praya. And the example is given of Kubja. Kubja, this Trivakra, right? That lady who was, she had lust towards Krishna. She was not on the same level of the gopis, and hence her category is called as Kama Praya. So this is about Raganuga devotees. Now, in Vaidhi Bhakti, people, we all go through these processes of Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajanakriya, Anartha Nivritti, Nishta, Ruchi, Bhava and Prema. So at the state of Bhava, Prema is where slowly the person's true identity is revealed. And and especially when a person is in the stage of Raganuga Bhakti, he is advanced to the stage of Raganuga, spontaneous devotion. At that time, inside he will be having Raganuga Bhakti. Externally, he will be performing the duties of a Vaidhi Bhakta. So, but still inside his seed has evolved, right? That plant has grown. So internally he'll be having spontaneous attraction. Externally he'll be doing the activities of a Vaidhi Bhakta. So this is the progression that is explained by our acharyas. So this is about verse number 55 that talks about bhakti, different people who attain perfection. You can attain, some people have attained perfection through negative feelings also, but we are not recommended to do that. We should have a positive feeling of devotion. It should be Krishna Anushilanam. And then we saw about Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, and we saw about Raganuga Bhakti. We saw how Raganuga Bhaktas are the followers of Ragatmika devotees, and different categories of that we saw a little bit. So this is about these verses. Now, we are almost ending the prayers. Actually, we have ended the prayers that finish with Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Only till verse number 55, Brahma says Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Verse number 56 is actually a very, very famous verse that is very, very celebrated. That will be the next class. That verse is actually the last verse Brahma prays. That doesn't finish with Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami, but it's a very long verse that Brahma says. He almost says about a lot of things in the next verse. After verse number 56, Krishna will begin to speak till verse number 62. So we'll have a maximum of 2 or 3 classes after this class. And with that, Brahma Samhita will be over. After Brahma finishes his prayers, Krishna will give him certain instructions. And with that, it will finish off. Okay, so technically we have finished the Govinda Madhi Purusham verses today. Tomorrow there is one verse that Brahma still speaks. And then we will see the remaining instructions that is given by Krishna. So I'll end the call now. Thank you all so much. If you have any questions, realizations or comments or any corrections, please let me know. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Mataji. Thank you so much for a very, very, it's been a long time. So thank you for going over a little bit of a review and then beautiful, beautiful class. I had a couple of questions. Okay, so comment in a sense. So I was just contemplating on how when you were saying that these are all witnesses, the fire, the sun, the moon, the wind, I was just thinking they're also personalities, no?
Yes, yeah.
They're also personalities who are actually seeing. So that actually is a little bit more powerful in a sense, because when it's something that is so, in a sense, impersonal, you're thinking about the wind, it doesn't seem so God-fearing, you know, it's not, you know, just fearful. But when you realize there's actually a personality there, if there is someone watching, that actually kind of puts you on a little bit more of a, you know, could be a little more careful. Also, I was thinking about this Varnashrama Dharma you were talking, this Daivi Varnashrama, and how you were saying that that if you just follow the Varnashrama Dharma system, then without devotion, then it's useless, which I understand also. It says that in the Bhagavatam also. But I'm just thinking about what about that whole process of in the Vedas in the Bhagavatam also, Srila Prabhupada talks about how this the Varnashrama system, Varnamashrama system was set up so that you can make a gradual elevation to. So do they not, although obviously devotion is higher and Varnashrama with devotion is higher, and that's what Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish, because he said not everybody can become a Brahmin or a Vaishnava or a Vaishnava Brahmin in, you know, full Krishna consciousness. So that's why he wanted to establish Varnashrama based on devotion and also maintaining your varna, whatever it is. But so what is the position of other people who are at this point just following their varna? I assume that they will also have a gradual elevation, although it may take millions and millions of lifetimes.
Yes, they will have a gradual evolution. I remember once when we were, actually there's also a Bhagavad Gita verse that somewhat talks about this. And when we were looking into that verse, we went on to a Srimad Bhagavatam verse. I'm not able to pinpoint that verse now, but I remember what that Bhagavatam verse was saying. It was saying something like, even people who are stuck to this Varnashram system, even when they're doing, for example, sacrifices or whatever, ultimately, they are worshipping the demigod or they are doing the sacrifice for a material benefit. But still, all this is offered to Vishnu. Vishnu is actually the Yajna Purusha who is offering these offerings. Vishnu appreciates that. So they have done some kind of an indirect service which Vishnu acknowledges. Though they have not done it consciously, or wanting to do devotion, they have done it in a very materialistic way, still it is appreciated. And that brings about purification over a period of time. So it takes a longer journey, like you were mentioning. It's a much, much longer journey. And eventually, over a period of time, they understand that all this is temporary, and that's when actually they start looking towards Krishna in the sense that I don't want this kind of results anymore. I want something better and higher, something that's permanent. And that's when they actually start performing devotion, and from there, it is actually valuable.
Okay. So then, so that's it. So it does. They do have some benefit. It's just that it's not as pure and it's not as quick. And okay. The other question I had was, so when you were explaining about how Krishna or the Surya Narayana or the that there's only one Surya of this whole universe. So is that personality that's in that Surya? I mean, is that the Lord Narayana, or is that the living entity? I wasn't sure. I was kind of confused.
So that is like kind of in some places where he is considered as Jiva, some places he is considered as Narayana. But we can understand from what they say is that he is like an empowered Shaktivesha kind of an incarnation.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what Tamal Krishna Maharaj said. I'm just repeating his words because I listened to his seminar before doing this. And he also said both things. He said in some places he's considered a Jiva, some places he's considered as Narayan. And this Prabhupada statement was also, I just picked this Prabhupada statement to understand about the Gayatri Mantra. So at that time he was mentioning this. Then he said, finally, we can understand that he's more or less like a Shakti Veshavatara. That's what we get the understanding as.
Okay, and so is that Vivasvan? Vivasvan who was in the beginning. Is that the same one that's in this universe? I'm thinking because it's 5,000 years ago.
Oh, Vivasvan. Yeah.
I mean, actually, it was before 5,000. He just said to Arjuna. It was way before that. But okay, and then this other question, which is kind of on the side, sort of, is that I always had this question, and I didn't know how to ask it. But so one thing is, we say that Krishna, there's, 8,400,000 species of life, 400,000 of the humankind and stuff. Why is it that Krishna has why is having two arms and two legs, is considered like the epitome? Like even, like there's that one, the Prarthana we say in the morning, I completely forgot. In the morning, Navadvipe Vijaguru, what is that one? There's a Prarthana we say when you get up in the morning, then you see your guru with the two hands, two eyes, two worshiping the Lord. I can't remember the verse. Let me try to think of it. I'll think of it eventually. I say it every morning and I can't remember now. Sri Guru Paramananda, Premananda. That's not the one. Okay, I'll try to remember it. And so I'm just wondering, why is that considered like the top?
Which one? The two-armed form?
Yeah, two-hand. Why is that? Because we say Krishna's two-handed form is the most beautiful and the most special. Is that kind of like egocentric in the sense of thinking that? Or I mean, of course it's in the Vedas, it says that, but I'm just curious as to why. I know, it's a silly question.
And the other day when I was hearing, this Brihad Bhagavatamrita, I don't know which class it was, we were going through this portion of a session where we were discussing about two-armed and four-armed and saying that two-armed is obviously better looking than four-armed.
And I'm thinking, that's because you're two-armed and that's what you think. But
maybe if I'm four-armed, I would think four-armed is better.
It's kind of a silly question. It is kind of a silly question, but I'm just, kind of like just silly things, thoughts come to my mind, and I'm just wondering about that.
That's a valid question, actually. Because we are used to two-arm, we think it's more beautiful.
Right. But this verse actually says that he is in, where is, Prata Sriman Navadvipe Dunetra Bhuj, Prata Sriman Navadvipe Dunetram Dibhujam Gurum. So Dvinetram, Dvibhujam, Gurum. So the Guru has two arms and two hands, and I offer my prostrate. So when I get up in the morning, visualizing my Guru Maharaj with his two hands and two arms and Navadvipa, I offer my prostrate obeisances. So I'm just curious as to why, you know, that just, anyway, so that was just a side note, sort of. So thank you. I feel a little more gutsy to ask you since there's not so many people.
You have a valid point.
Okay, and the other side is, you know, sometimes although we know that we are servants of the Lord, and how come every once in a while we get this thought, or I get this thought, why does he get to be God? I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, it's not like, not really like that, not really so bluntly, but it's just like this little thing that, but on the one hand, I'm enjoying what I'm doing. You know, I'm enjoying the service. It's not like I'm feeling I'm servile and I'm servant and I'm being downtrodden or like a slave or something like that. But just like, why does, you know, obviously it's conditioning that brings this forward, but I was just thinking, I mean, it's this kind of, you know, what do you call it, these insinuating thoughts that, you know, cause the downfall in the first place. So it's also the thoughts
maybe
that
are... The, because we tend to think like that. I think everyone tends to think like that.
That's what I think, and I'm thinking that's what's keeping us here. So anyway, that was my little realization. Okay, thank you, Mataji.
Actually, I don't know, even I was also having this thought of, not exactly like, why is he God or something, but this thought of... like, you know, even the Mayavadis, I was just, sometimes I do this, I get into the zone of understanding what the Mayavadis do for some reason. But I was just listening to some Mayavadis and I was thinking, man, these people, they are so confident that they are God. You know, it's sometimes so annoying. And then you begin to think, yeah, actually everyone, this, to some extent, they have this kind of a thought. And these people are just, you know, getting too much on it, and they are overly talking about it, and they are imagining themselves to be God, and they're telling it to the whole world and telling, I can make you God. It's a kind of a mental state is what I was thinking when I was hearing them. Because deep within, there are some impressions like this within all of us, actually.
Yeah.
And they're just they're stimulating it more and more and more. Whereas Vaishnavas practicing this Siddhanta of understanding that we are the servant, by our regular association and the classes, we're trying to put down that feeling.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. I see. Yeah, I understand it. Yeah, makes sense. Very nice, Mataji. Very nice. Hare Krishna.
Yeah, thank you, Mataji. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Mataji. Dandavat. I think I'm the only person left, right, Mataji? No.
Yeah. Yes, Prabhu. Dandavat.
Dandavat, Mataji. Mataji, I want to talk a lot, Mataji. No questions. I want to talk a lot.
Yes, Prabhu. Please talk. But, waiting to listen.
But my battery is very weak. I'm outside. So every time I may get disconnected.
Okay.
Mataji, so nice class, Mataji. I mean, if you would have stopped 10 minutes back before the last word said, Mataji, I would have gone emotional and spoke so many things. But
you can still, Prabhu.
No, Mataji. I mean, after that discussion, question answers, right? That mood is gone, Mataji. Probably I will call you tomorrow like that. This class is so good, Mataji. I mean, because, you know, like, I'm in some bad mood, Mataji, in the last 2 months. I'm in search of job and everything. And today I got a news, something is selected, everything is good.
Oh, nice. Okay.
I've gone through so much of pain and so many things, Mataji. I mean, today's class, it looks like it's planned by Krishna for me. I mean, of course, he doesn't care for me, but it's so nice, Mataji. Last night, around 12:30, I just woke up and I was just thinking what's going on in my life and all those things. Then I started listening to Bhagavad Gita, Mataji. There's one YouTube channel. I was listening, so coincidentally, it was chapter 11, the universal form. So when you were talking, it was midnight, my wife and daughter, they were sleeping. So it was midnight, I was I enjoyed so much, Mataji, because I was already in pain, right? So when you were saying today's class, you started with Krishna is the source of all incarnations and everything, right? So last night, in Bhagavad Gita, right, Mataji, you said like, so Krishna's, his face was so furious. I mean, Arjuna, seriously, he didn't enjoy that one, seriously. He was scared. He was requesting him, just please stop that one, I can't see that one. Because Prabhupada explains in such a way like, in the face, right, Krishna's face, he got so many thousands of teeth, and he's biting all these people, right, all these Kauravas and all army and everybody, he's biting with his teeth and killing them. So seeing that Arjuna couldn't digest, how could God do it like that? I mean, I know my friend, he was so pleasant, he was so nice. We shared bed, we shared the plate, same plate, food. How could he bite with his teeth and all his fire is coming out of his all places, and to that burn, he's making the jivas to ashes. He can't digest that one. So then slowly he says, like, yes, I can do all these things, but I'm not doing that one. So it's opulences. Because the chapter before that, it says, like, the opulences, which were not shared in previous chapters. Krishna says, like, I have so much of this one. I can do many things. Today you were telling that, Mother, he can frighten the people. Same time, he can love the person. He can do anything. So the chapter really, it made so much sense for me, Mother. I liked it so much. Then after that, Mataji, you mentioned about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's explanation. So he's assuring, like, so, of course, I'm not a devotee, Mataji, but at least the devotees, right, Mataji, they go through so much of pain.
Yes, yes.
At some point, you will hate, seriously, Mataji. The hate you said is a different thing, Mataji, hate and delusion. But even the regular devotees, when they can't meet their standard, I mean, when they can't survive, say financially or mentally or in family life or anything, any kind of problems, at some point they will have to hate. Because even based on the movies and many sages movies, right, Mataji, they hate the Lord. I hate, please get out, go away. Those kind of things. In that one, still they are very much immersed in the love. They are missing, they are missing the Lord. Even though they are, even I heard like one person, very good friend, Mataji, from Orissa. Especially one of his Panda's family is related. So he said, like, when they get the Lord Jagannath outside, they chastise him. They scold the Lord. I asked him, scold is what? They say, you, like that. He said, no, it's a real scolding. It's useless. Fellow. You are dead. You are this. You are like the son of that. I said, are you sure? He said, yes. The Pandas, they say, even the bad words, the real bad words. The Lord. So after they get satisfied, see, you can't go and beat somebody, right, Mata. You can go and beat your sister, your brother, or your husband at the most. But you can't do with other persons. So they're showing their love by showing their hate feeling. I hate you, get away, go away, don't show your face to the Lord. By saying that, they're showing their feeling of missing, how much they are missing, since they cannot see that one. I could really correlate, Mataji, what's going on in my present situation and the last night, you know, Sarupam. This class is so good, Mataji. It was very much apt for me to hear. That's why we were in a store, Mataji. They said, like, let's go. I said, no, I want to talk, so don't go anywhere.
Wow.
Let me talk in a present way. So I asked them to just go away. If you are here, right, I can't even talk. So I want to open up and... But, Mataji, I have so many other things, Mataji, but I unfortunately forgot, Mataji, because I couldn't make a note of this one.
Prabhu, it's okay, Prabhu, you can share more. It's so nice when you share.
Yeah, I really enjoyed, Mataji. I'm so... I don't know, Mataji. It was so nice, Mataji. We don't know how we can pay you back. You were spending so much time giving us so much hope. Not to get out from this Krishna, at least for me, Mataji, not to go far from Krishna, all these things, right? These kind of sessions, explanations, right, Mataji, they really help me, and they're helping me, Mataji. That's all, Mataji. I will try to call you later, Mataji, if I have any questions.
Sure, Prabhu, please call.
yeah, it's already late, Mataji. I'm done, Mataji. That's all. Thank you so much, man. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much for opening up, speaking so nicely, Prabhu. Thank you, Prabhu.
Thank you, Mataji.
Then we can end the call. So thank you both so much. And I'm very selfish. Only when I'm available, irrespective of who comes or not, I try to give class. Because many days I'm not able to make it on Thursdays. So, I mean, like because of other family commitments. So anyway, I'm so sorry. Because only when I come, I am pushing everyone to come. But I hope next 2-3 weeks we somehow keep it. I keep it regular. And we finish off the Brahma Samhita. I think we'll finish it very soon, just 2 or 3 weeks at the max. Then we can think of some good topic and a good speaker next.
Okay. Mataji, in fact, like whatever the gap, right, Mataji, missing classes, it's really good, Mataji. Generally, we know the what we are missing. Otherwise, it becomes like a routine.
Yeah, sometimes even, what is it? It's true, like even when I can't come this week and all that, then the next week I'm more enthused to prepare better. Like, you know, you feel, I already missed 1 week, so I should do a better job. So that's nice, Prabhu. That's really nice.
Yeah, Mataji, it's like something like when we are traveling, if you don't eat like Indian food for, say, 3 days, you feel like you're starving. You want to eat everything. Like, I mean, seriously, Mataji, that's good. I mean, no issues, Mataji. I mean, please don't feel like sorry for us.
Okay.
Good, Mataji. Yeah.
Okay, so thank you so much. Thank you so much, Mataji. So we'll end the call. Vancha Kalpatal Vishcha Krapasthu Vyavati. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.